we don't read anything about him in terms of sin or mistakes. Now, some people would say that when he was talking to his brothers about them, you know, about the sun, the moons, and the stars bowing down, that we see some arrogance there. I don't know if that's true. I think he was just telling them about the dream he had. But we don't see any sin in the life of Joseph. Now, we know that he was a sinner and that he did sinful things, but we don't read about them in the Bible. The other character that we don't see any sin in is Daniel. Everybody else, every other Old Testament character, we see failures in their life. We see murder in the life of Moses. Murder in the life of David, and you just kind of walk through, and they all have like some issues. We got a lot of chapters about Joseph, and we don't see any big issues. Okay, now of course Jesus is a New Testament character that we not only see no sin, but there is no sin in his life. So as we've been looking, we've watched Joseph, and we've watched him talk about the prophecy of the sun, moon, and the stars and the sheaves bowing down to him. And then his brothers got a little ticked off when he got that really fancy coat. And he was coming out to check on them and to check on the sheep. And while he was out there checking on them, they beat him up. They threw him in a pit. They wanted to murder him. But instead, they sold him as a slave into Egypt. And they thought that was the end of him. Okay, he ended up in Potiphar's house. He did everything he was supposed to do in Potiphar's house. He lived the way he was supposed to. He resisted the temptation of Potiphar's wife. And he left his coat when he was running away from that temptation. And in the midst of that, we had Potiphar's wife accusing him of trying to rape her. And so as his life was getting better, he gets thrown into a dungeon. And when he's in the dungeon, the chief jailer realizes what a great job he does and the administrative qualities that this man has. And so he puts him in charge of all the prisoners. And so he's in charge of all the prisoners. And what we see from a bird's eye view is we see like God giving him a little challenge. And when he's faithful with that challenge, he gives him a little bit more challenge, because managing a prison is a lot more difficult than managing a household. And then we've got the baker and the cupbearer that bring their dreams. And we find out that this guy's like the perfect guy, man. I mean, he's administrative. He's good at ruling and administering things and building wealth. And he's good looking. And on top of all that, he also has the gift of prophecy. I mean, he's like every woman's dream and every man's nightmare, right? Okay. And so that's what we got going on with Joseph. The cupbearer forgets Joseph for a couple years. But then Pharaoh has a dream. And that dream is with the seven fat and skinny cows and the seven heads of fat heads of grain and the seven shriveled heads of grain, and how those shriveled ones are eating the fat ones. Remember that? This must have been some kind of dream, because he's like, nobody's doing nothing until I get this dream interpreted. And so he puts it out there. No one can interpret the dream for him. And then the cupbearer goes, hey, I remember there's this guy in jail. And so they bring Joseph up. He's able to interpret the dreams. Hey, there's going to be 7 years of bounty and 7 years of famine. Take that 7 years of bounty and set some aside for the future. And once you set some aside, then you'll be able to save the world from this famine that's coming. Well, that famine is felt in the land of Canaan, and Jacob's sons are going to go to look for grain in Egypt. They hear there's grain in Egypt, and 10 of the 12 show up. Of course, Joseph is already there, and the only one that doesn't show up is Benjamin. Well, Joseph, I believe, has forgiven his brothers, because if he hadn't forgiven them, he would have just lopped their heads off, but he doesn't know if he can trust them yet. And so he is going to keep Simeon in jail until they bring Benjamin to him. They're like, you know, he was attacked. They thought they had killed him. I think he's kind of wondering, well, there's the 10 of them, but where's my brother? These are brothers from a different mother, but I want the brother from, right? And so he sends them off and keeps Simeon in jail. Like, hey, you guys come back if you... And Jacob, the father, says, no way. You're not going to send Benjamin back. And we looked at that little temper tantrum last time we talked about this. Okay? So then we get into verse, or chapter 43, verse 1. They've taken grain back to the land, but that grain is running out. That grain is running out. So, chapter 43, verse 1. Now the famine was severe in the land. So it came about when they had finished eating the grain, which they had brought from Egypt, that the father said to them, the father there is
Jacob,
go back and buy us a little food. And Judah spoke to him, however, saying, the man solemnly warned us, you shall not see my face again unless your brother is with you. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you do not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, you will not see my face unless your brother is with you. Okay, now couple things. Basically, Jacob's thing is, hey, we're just going to wait it out. We're going to let Simeon rot in jail. We're not sending Benjamin. Okay, he's still playing favorites. I think they were kind of treated a little bit harshly. So I think Jacob has this doubt that this man that's in Egypt is actually going to even send Simeon back. But, you know, it catches up to him. They don't know the famine's going to be 7 years long. And so they're not going to have enough grain. And so they're going to need to get some more grain. So he's going to say, okay, guys, we're running out of grain again. If we don't do something about this, we're all going to die. We don't have enough food. So you guys need to go back down. And what we're going to see is we're going to see this man. Look in your text there. It's Judah that's going to speak up in verse 3. Now, a couple things that are interesting. We're going to see some leadership out of Judah here. Okay, we're going to see some leadership out of Judah, and we're going to talk about that a little bit. But I want to remind you, the last time we saw Judah was in chapter 38. Chapter 37, we saw the character of Joseph. We saw him being thrown into the pit. In chapter 39, we see Joseph resisting Potiphar's wife. Potiphar's wife is coming on to him, and he's resisting that temptation. But in chapter 38, we have a major, major failure, right? And we even talked about this, that a lot of preachers don't even preach chapter 38 because it's sensitive. And remember what happened with Judah? Remember that his daughter-in-law, Tamar, lost the first husband, and then the second husband got lost, and he ended up going and sleeping with a prostitute. And it turned out that the prostitute was his own daughter-in-law, Tamar. Do you remember that? That was Judah. Okay, now, that's a pretty sensitive story. It shows the depravity that was in this man's life. But what we're going to see in chapter 43 and moving along into chapter 44 and 45 is we're going to see a switch. There's a character change in the life of Judah. Okay? To the point where Messiah is going to come from one of these tribes, right? Jesus, a couple thousand years later, is going to be born. He's going to be born out of the line of David. And David's great-great-great-great-grandfather is going to be Judah, the Lion of Judah. God is going to choose for the offspring to be through Tamar and Judah. You look in Matthew chapter 1, you're going to see that in the list of the genealogy of the Messiah. Okay? And you know what this is telling me? One of the things that this tells me is that it doesn't matter what mistakes you've made. God can use you. God can take your sin and separate it as far as the east is from the west. Now, when we deal with sin, there is there are sometimes consequences for sin, and some of those consequences for the things that we do will never leave us. The guilt for those things that we do can be removed for us, right? As far as the east is from the west, so far has your sin been removed from you. In other words, in the eyes of God, you're free. If you've given your life to Jesus, He has forgiven you. Now, those consequences may live with you the rest of your life. But the guilt and the shame that comes with those things can be taken away from you. Okay? And we are going to see Judah step into this role of, he's going to be the leader of the clan when this whole thing's over with. Okay? Now, look with me. Let me just give you a couple more things. The first thing is he has finally come to a point where he's not bending stuff around. He's not taking the truth or what's going on. He is, here's the deal. He stands up to his dad. His dad's the head of the clan. I don't think he's doing it in a disrespectful way. Dad says, hey, go back, get some more grain. And Judah says, look, this is what the man said. Now, who's the man? The man's Joseph. He doesn't know the man's Joseph. What do they know about this guy? He's got a really fancy name that I can't really even say. Okay? But it means seer of the things of God. Okay? In other words, he thinks that this guy's like some kind of prophet. He's able to see things when they go and do things. He's able to distinguish their birth order and different things like that. Okay, I mean, they're not thinking, oh, this is Joseph. What they're thinking is, oh, this guy knows things that other people don't know. They're probably thinking he's some kind of voodoo guy or something like that. Okay, are you with me? He's a prophet. All right. So he's very clear with his dad. Look, if you send Benjamin with us, I will go down there. We'll buy you food. But if you do not send him, we won't go down. We won't go down. Okay? This is the command. We will do it according to the way that it's been commanded to us. There's like some submission here. There's some like, hey, I'm not going to do what you tell me if it's not morally right. Okay? Are you guys seeing this with me? The command is clear, and I will do according to the command. I will not go outside of what has been commanded. Okay? Now look at the little manipulative thing that Jacob's going to do. In verse 6, remember he has two names, Jacob and Israel. And Israel said, why did you treat me so badly by telling the man that you had another brother? He's like, you guys are idiots. Why didn't you just lie about it? He's really in denial here. He's really in denial. It doesn't matter what's happened in the past. We have a situation, and we got to deal with the situation as it is, not as how it might have been if we would have done something different. Okay? You may have done things different. Hindsight's 20/20. A lot of us wish we could go back and our older self could counsel our younger self and say, don't do this, do this. But we can't. We're stuck with what we have, and we've got to get out of that place of denial and move forward with the hand that we have. Okay, look at verse 7. But they said, the man questioned particularly about us and our relatives, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? So we answered his questions. Could we possibly know that he would say, bring your brother down? Hey, Dad. The guy kept asking these questions. It was like he knew that we had another brother. It was like he knew that he wanted to know if you were alive or not. Now, we understand. We've got this bird's eye view. We can understand. They think, oh, here's a prophet. Somehow he knows we have another brother. It's just weird. Right? Are you guys with me? Okay, look at verse 8. Judah said to his father Israel, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die. We as well as you and our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible for him. If I do not bring him back for you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you forever. For if we had not delayed, surely we would have returned twice. Okay? A couple things. There's some amazing things here. I know it doesn't seem very amazing, but I'm looking at the, I'm almost getting ready to cry here because of what's happening. Okay? You remember in the last chapter, one of the last things that we saw in chapter 42 was we saw the oldest son, Reuben, said, hey, look, Dad, send Benjamin with me. I'll bring him back and get Simeon for us. Okay? And if I don't bring him back, you can have my two kids. You can kill my two boys. Okay? Now, look at the difference between what Reuben does and what Judah says. Reuben is willing to put his kids on the line. Judah says what? It's me. I will be the surety for you. I will be the one. Now, again, what we have going on here is amazing. I myself will be the surety to him. In 2,000 years, one will come from the line of Judah, the Lion of Judah. Jesus Christ himself will come, and he will be the surety for you and me. There is something prophetic going on, even in this moment when Judah stands up and says, it's on me. Now, let me just stop for a second and say something. A lot of people in the idea of leadership, they want to take the credit, but they don't want to take the blame. They want to take the credit and they don't want to take the blame. In fact, they want to be successful. People want to be successful, but they don't want to fail. Sometimes that can control us. I am so afraid of my failure that I'm not even going to give myself to be a chance to be a success. Right? I believe one of the things that Judah is doing here is he is taking some steps of faith. Look, there's 10 others or there's 9 other brothers here. If we fail, it won't be on any of them. It will be on me. Ladies and gentlemen, that is called leadership. We fail because we never even get started. We have big ideas about how we want to do things, businesses we want to start, improvements we want to make in our marriages, steps we want to take with our children to grow them and to increase their capacity, but we're so afraid we might fail that we never take a step forward. Okay? Are you guys with me?
Yeah.
At some point in our lives, if we want success, we have to be willing to look like a fool. We have to be willing to make a mistake. Okay? In fact, we even use terms like failure. You're either a success or you're a failure. You know what? Every time we fail, we have the opportunity to learn something.
Amen.
We have an opportunity to learn something. Maybe it's how not to do something. I've had some like that. Like, I'll never do that again. Right? Or sometimes, most of the time, it's not like, you know, you're either on the pinnacle or you're in the pit. It's like, you know, maybe it's more important to get on the ladder and be a little bit lower on the ladder and then be able to climb the ladder rather than never get on. Judah is showing leadership here. He's no longer thinking about himself. He's no longer thinking about prostitutes and what it will do for him. He's now thinking about, I'll be responsible. I'll be responsible. Look at verse 15 with me. So the man, verse 11. Then their father Israel said to him, if it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best products of the land in your bags and carry them down to the man as a present. A little balm, a little honey, aromatic gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Okay? In other words, what do they lack? They got everything but grain, the staff of life. Okay? Take some stuff. There's some wisdom here. They're kind of already in bad with this guy. So take some presents for him. Look at verse 12. Take double the money in your hand and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sack. Perhaps it was a mistake. Take your brother also and arise, return to the man, that God Almighty may grant you compassion in the sight of the man, so that he will release you to your other brother and Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. Okay? Now, a couple things. He has finally come to a place where he's left his denial. Okay? Interesting that he says in verse 14, may God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight of men, that he will release you and your other brother and Benjamin. In other words, it's God who grants us favor in the sights of other people. Yes. Right? Now, he's doing his part, right? He's taking some of this balm and honey and pistachio nuts and almonds. He's doing his part. But he realizes that ultimately favor comes from God. Favor comes from God. He has that part right. Okay? Look at the last part, too. If I'm bereaved of my children, I'm bereaved. He's finally talking sense. Okay? Hiding Benjamin in a tent, sending all the rest of them to Egypt to do the dirty work, and keeping Benjamin in the tent isn't necessarily keeping Benjamin safe. In fact, it's probably turning him into a spoiled brat. We can't protect the lives of other people around us, can we? We can't protect our... I mean, there's a certain amount that we can do for our children, but ultimately a comet could fall out of the sky and hit our house and take us all. Or a car accident. And he's finally come to a place where he's like, okay, I realize that God is the one who gives life and death. God is the one who does what he wants to do. God is the one who has numbered our days. He knows when we'll take our last breath. He knows how many heartbeats we have. I can't add to those heartbeats. I can't add to those days. It's in God's hands. And if I'm so busy trying to protect everything that I have, if I'm so busy holding on with two fists, I'm too busy. And when we take what we have, whether it's our children, whether it's our time, whether it's our money, and we clench it with our fist, God can't give us more. God cannot give to a closed fist. Now, I'm not saying be an idiot or a fool. I'm not saying to be a fool. Okay? God's given us wisdom. He's given us the ability to make wise choices. Okay? But ultimately, it's in his hands. Look at verse 18 with me. I'm sorry, verse 15. I'm really skipping ahead, aren't I? So the men took his present. They took double money in their hand in Benjamin, and they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. Okay. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to his house steward, "Bring the men into the house and slay an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon." So the men did as Joseph said. They brought the men to Joseph's house. Okay, he is going to send his steward to talk to these guys. Again, remember that his identification is concealed. They see him. He's got this big, long Egyptian name, and it means God speaks. God speaks through this guy. He knows all of these things. He is, I don't think they understand that he gets this ability from Yahweh, from the true God. I think they think he's getting it from, I don't know where they think he's getting it from, but he's a diviner. They're going to find a silver cup in Benjamin's bag, and they're going to come back and he's going to say, "You took the silver cup that I used to divine the future with." I don't think the silver cup did anything for him, but I think he's like, ooh, capital offense. People are going to die for this. Okay? Man, let me ask you a question. I know you may not like the current president of the United States, but if you got a... Think of a president that you do like if you don't like this one. If you got an invitation to come and to eat lunch with the president of the United States, how would you feel about that? Would that make you happy or would that make you sad? If it'd make you happy, give me one of these. Just give me a thumbs up. Happy. A president you like. If it'd make you sad, give me one of these. Okay? Are you with me? This, in other words, if you're talking to a person with more power and authority than anybody else in the land, and they're asking you to lunch, that's a pretty good day for you, isn't it? That's a pretty good day. Okay, look at verse 18 with me. Verse 18, "Now the men were afraid because they were being brought to Joseph's house, and they said, 'It is because of the money that was returned in our sacks the first time that we are being brought in, that he may seek occasion against us and fall on us and take us for slaves with our donkeys.'" Okay, these people have no joy because they've got this guilt complex. They are completely worried about when this should be a joy-filled occasion. Okay, are you feeling the gravity? Joseph has put the full court press on these guys. Okay, look at, I just find this a little bit funny. He wants to fall upon us, take us for our slaves and our donkeys. Okay, he's going to take our donkeys from us. Right? That obviously a different culture than we live in today. Look at verse 19. "So they came near to Joseph's house steward and spoke with him at the entrance of the house." Now, remember, this is the guy who's in charge of Joseph's house. Joseph used to be in charge of a house. But this is the guy, this isn't Joseph that they're talking to. They're talking to the steward. They're so worried. In verse 20, "Oh, my Lord, we indeed came down for the first time to buy food. And we came about that when we came to the lodging place that we opened our sacks. And behold, each man's money was in the mouth of his sack. Our money is full. So we have brought it back in our hands. We have also brought down the money in our hands to buy food. We do not know who put the money in our sacks." In other words, the first thing they do, you show up at the president's house to eat a meal with him, man, there's some probably cool looking pictures on the wall, and there's probably stuff to look at, and there's probably amazing things, and they're worried about this money that was back in their sacks. This joy-filled occasion is full of complete worry because of what's going on. Look at verse 23. "He said," the he there is the house steward, "we do not know who put I'm sorry. He said, be at ease. Don't be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sack. I had your money. Then he brought Simeon out to them. Okay? In other words, look, I think this chief steward is a little bit in on this too. I think he's got kind of an idea of what's going on. Maybe a complete idea or maybe just a partial idea. He's like, hey, what are you guys doing? Don't worry about the money. Don't worry about the money. I mean, if you borrowed 20 bucks from a billionaire and you show up at his house and you're like, oh man, you know, I know we're supposed to eat lunch, but I got this 20 bucks that I forgot to pay him back. The guy who let you in the door is like, you're worried about 20 bucks? You're worried about 20 bucks? Just relax. Okay, that's kind of what's going on here. Look at verse 24. Then the man there is the house steward, brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water. They washed their feet and he gave their donkeys fodder. So they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they had heard that they were to eat a meal there. When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand, and they bowed to the ground before him. Okay, so they're like, okay, well, let's talk about the money later, but let's get this present. Remember, they brought some balm and some pistachio nuts and some almonds and some honey. Let's get that ready so when he comes in, we'll be able to present it to him. Hey, look what we brought you. We're so excited to see you, and we brought you stuff. Okay, look at verse 27. I'm sorry, 26. When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand and bowed to the ground before him. Then he asked them about the welfare and said, is your old father well, of whom you spoke? Is he alive? And they said, your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive. They bowed down in homage. Okay, what does Joseph care about? He care about a little honey and some almonds and some pistachios. He's like, how's the old man doing? Okay? He's not going to say, my dad, how's dad doing? Because they don't know. Okay? He's still speaking through an interpreter. He's not speaking Hebrew to them. Okay? He looks different. They have no idea who he is. But he wants the news. It's almost humorous, I'm sure, when they look back, like, yeah, he kept asking us about our brother. He kept asking us about our dad. He kept asking us about, like, personal stuff. Okay, but they have no idea. I think it's almost hilarious. Look at verse 29. He lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? He knows the answer to that question, doesn't he? By the way, God asks questions of people. Remember Adam and Eve in the garden? Adam, where are you? Was it because God didn't know? He knew. Right? Adam, who told you you were naked? Does he know? Yes, he does. There may be a leadership principle there, too. I was told by a pastor to never ask a question you don't know the answer to. Okay? Now, he meant that in terms of when you're dealing with some moral issue in the church. It's one thing to fail. It's another thing to live in denial of your failure and to lie about your failure. Right? Nothing will lose trust quicker than lies. Is this your brother? Let's see how they answer. He said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke? And he said, may God be gracious to you, my son. We don't have them saying yes, but it's implied. Okay? Look at verse 30. At this point, Joseph is so emotional about the situation. Joseph hurried out of the place. He was deeply stirred over his brother, and he sought a place to weep. He entered his chamber and wept there. He is totally overwhelmed. He has not seen his brother for over 20 years. And now he's in the business right now. He is trying to figure out whether these guys have changed or whether they're still excited about killing their own brother. Right? And at this point, he can't reveal himself. And even though he's got all of this emotional stuff, he's going to start crying. He's going to turn his back on them. He's going to go into his own bedroom, and he's going to cry there. And he's going to get his emotions out, and he is going to put his emotions aside so that he can deal with this logically, cognitively. Okay? There are times in our life where we need to deal with things emotionally, and there's times in our life where we need to set the emotion aside. Let me ask you a question. Can you set emotion aside? Yeah, you can. Can you stop your anger when you're angry? Yeah, you can. You know how I know that? My mom taught me that lesson. Because one time she was very angry at me. And I'm going to tell you right now, I deserved it. I deserved her anger. I did something dumb. I don't remember what it was, but she was yelling, "You did this, and blah, blah, blah. And back in those days, we had a phone on the wall and no answering machine, and the phone rang, and she was, "Rah, rah, rah, rah," and then she picked up the phone, "Hello." I'm probably the only person that ever happened to. I'm like, dude, she was able to turn her anger off like that. You know what? You and I have the ability to have a good day or have a bad day. We don't have the ability to control all the circumstances, but we have the ability to decide whether it's going to be a good day or a bad day. I can decide that this is going to be a good day today. We get a flash of anger. We have the ability to say, instead of reacting, I'll turn it off. Okay? Now, when our emotions build, and it's like a balloon, and as you blow on it, the pressure builds and builds and builds. Okay? And sometimes we have to release that. Otherwise, it'll pop. Okay? Do you see what Joseph does? He's got this balloon, and it's about to pop. And he excuses himself from the group, and he goes and deals with it. Okay? Sometimes the best course of action is to take a step back to get some relief from the pressure, and then we'll deal with it. Okay, look at verse 31. We're closing in on the end of this chapter. Then he washed his face and came out. He controlled himself. He said, "Serve the meal." So they served him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat bread with Hebrews, for that is loathsome to Egyptians. Okay, let's stop. I just want to paint the picture, then we're going to come back to it. Joseph is up on this platform, maybe. He's got a table all to himself. Man, the king of the world eats alone. You don't have a right to sit at my table with me. You go eat over there. Okay? So you got Joseph eating here. You've got a group of Egyptians eating here. And you've got his brothers eating somewhere else. Okay? They're not seated together. They're not the same social class. Okay, now that's weird to us. It's weird to you, and it's weird to me. We We don't have social classes like this. We just all eat at the same table. Okay, look at verse 33. Now, when they were seated before him, the firstborn according to his birthright and the youngest according to his youth, the men looked at one another in astonishment. Okay? They're sitting at the table in birth order. Now again, you and I, bird's eye view, it's their brother. Of course he knows their birth order. Right? You ever met someone with a lot of kids in the family? They just rattle off how many the kids in the order and all that kind of stuff. You know the birth order in your household, right? He knows. They don't know that he knows. They're like, dude, this guy really does have some power here.
Yeah.
Okay, they're freaked out. It's almost fun to watch, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like one practical joke after another.
Yeah.
Although it's not a joke, he's testing them to see if they've changed. Okay, and then finally, he took portions to them from his own table, but Benjamin's portion was 5 times as much as any of theirs. So they feasted and drank freely with him. Okay, now remember, we are in the middle of a famine. This is the most food they've eaten. Okay, now Joseph has his table. Where's all the food? Is there food on this table and food on this table and food on this table? Nope. It's all on Joseph's table. Joseph says, I want that guy to have some of this. Bring it over to him. I want this guy to have this. Bring it over. That's what's happening. He doesn't have to feed him anything if he doesn't want to. Again, different culture, different situation. Who ends up with the most food? Brother. His brother's probably gorged himself and can't eat anymore.
My brother.
Okay? Now, a couple things. I want to point something out. In verse 33, because it says that the Egyptians eat by themselves and the Hebrews eat by themselves, and it says, for that is loathsome to the Hebrews to eat, or loathsome to the Egyptians to eat bread with the Hebrews. See that word loathsome? I've got it underlined. This is racism at its peak. Okay. Do I need to say racism's bad? I hope not. I hope we know that. I hope we know that. Okay. Now, God is going to use this sin of racism to protect the Hebrew people. Okay? You know what's going to happen? We know the end of the story, right? Hebrews are going to move down into Egypt. There's going to be a new Pharaoh that rises up. He's going to forget about Joseph. The Egyptians